Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, May 1st, 2023. To begin with, this meeting is being recorded. As usual, the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips. For people joining via phone calls, you can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. For everyone on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you would like to make comments, you can go under reactions and click on the raise hand icon. That will raise and or lower your virtual hands. If you're able to use these tools, it's helpful because then we know that somebody's trying to make a comment and we can have one speaker at a time. As of right now, everyone is on mute. I would request for you to stay on mute unless speaking. It helps us eliminate any external noise. We do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. I would request for everyone to please state your name before speaking. Before making your comment. This helps them in doing their job. It also helps everyone on the phone call knowing who the speaker is at the time. Chair Sheehan, would you like me to go through the roll call at this time?
Yes, that would be great. Thank you, Anu.
Thank you. When I call out the names of the AAC members, please confirm your presence. Azar Atura, Darnese Bush, Tino Calabia.
Present.
Audio now unmuted.
Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin. Steve Caffin had informed that he may not be able to join today's meeting. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel. Sandy Newsel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simono. And Philip Weintraub. All right, that concludes the roster for today's AAC meeting.
Thomas Mangum here too.
Okay, thank you, Thomas. Chair Sheehan, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you, Anu. I appreciate being here. I'm going to change the agenda around a little bit, and actually I jumping through the list of participants, we have several board members here with us tonight. Anu, maybe you could jump to the list and see. I don't want to leave anybody out. I did see three or four names here.
Chair Sheehan, this is Anu.
Yes.
We do have Lucinda Babers on the meeting with us. And pardon me while I go through the list here. Sarah Klein.
Oh, that's one good.
Good,
Trying to help her. I saw that name pop in.
And I am still going through. I do apologize if I do not call out any board members' names if I don't see it. Yes, Ms. Halper has joined.
Wonderful.
I would actually request the board members to please come off of mute and let us know that if you are here. I am just trying to make sure that I do not miss any of the board members. I'm able to recognize three at this point.
And our CFO just joined also, Yotande.
Yes, Ms. Olumide has joined.
Very good. Very good. So, Anu, you know, we invited the board members here tonight to say thank you. But I was lucky enough to be standing when we had this this go forward with respect to Metro Access. And I was real pleased about that. But there are some people here that had a lot more to do with this than I did. So Phil, I'd like to hand this part over to you because this was really something that you worked towards for the last 8 years. Really Phil and Denise and Paul have been three of the architects that really moved this forward. So Phil, maybe you would like to start off and talk about this a little bit. And we're here to say thank you. So you're up, Phil.
Okay, well, I'll sort of deflect a little bit because last Thursday's board meeting, the entire budget team was thanked. And Yotunde is here today, and she was and is the captain of the budget team. And it was amazing how many people it took to put together that budget. And it was magnificent. And part of the things that were magnificent was just not just looking at the money, the inflow and the outflow and coming up with zero as a balance, but taking input from everybody, including us and including the RAC who joined us. And coming up with a brilliant solution to the Metro Access fares. And we had, for quite a long time, based upon input from members of the community that use Metro Access, coming every month and complaining about several things, but usually they didn't understand what the fare was. And so we had been simply requesting a flat fare between $0 and $4 that would be sustainable. And that was the job of all of the budget people to work out. And Ms. Klein and her group came up with something much more brilliant than we ever imagined. Instead of a flat fare between $0 and $4, they decided, how about a peak fare of $4? And that's advantageous to the ridership because the fare is calculated as twice the comparable fare on bus or rail. And since there are so many different bus and rail combinations, sometimes the fare is as low as $2. And if we had had a flat fare of $4, some people would have been paying more. They would have understood it, but they would have been paying more. But now they are guaranteed it will not be more than $4. And should they luck out and the district go to free buses or Alexandria go to free buses on some items, and Brianna will tell us if Arlington is going to do something with free buses, they win. So we wanted to thank everybody that put together the budget and took input from the normal ridership, the accessibility ridership, and came up with a balanced budget that is sustainable right now and fair. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I think you all saw Patrick's and Denise's response, and they were at the meeting when it was first presented. So I'll turn it back, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Phil. And Phil, I appreciate your leadership. You spent 8 years fighting for this, and some years it looked kind of bleak, and we didn't get it, but we worked, and we got the numbers, and we got the data.
Mr. Chair, we weren't fighting. We were suggesting.
Yes. And we also, cooperation also from WMATA staff, Mr. Blake, and working with us and discussing with us the abilities ride, and that whole process was very, very helpful. But Phil, I just wanted to thank you. I also want to thank board members that are here for their work. I want to also now recognize Denise. You were with me at that board meeting, and maybe you have a couple things to say here too.
Hello, good afternoon. This is Ms. Rush, and the board that is there, in addition to the board members that are not there, know that I am overly joyed. I thought they were going to have to call 911. It's been a long time, but with patience and listening and understanding, it happened. It was just a shock to hear it out of Ms. Klein's mouth. I wasn't expecting it, and I'm getting old, and it was just too much. The board members now will see or can understand. They have compassion, they listen. I'm just lost for words, but the joy, I know you all saw the joy, and I hope you hear the joy and the appreciation for the cap of $4, because the disabled community needs it. And we will be writing. We will be grateful. And thank you. I want to thank the board for having listened when we asked for a lot of things. We didn't get all the things we wanted over the years, but this was a plus. They added some women to the board. I asked for that for a long time. I said, it's crazy, all the people that, the women that are riding the rails and the buses. You got to have some women. We got to have some women and another viewpoint, because, you know, Venus and Mars are different and you see things differently. But thank you so much. We are so appreciative of what you have done. And I'm advanced thanking you for what you're going to hear and help us with in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise. Paul, you've been to all the hearings, I think, for the last 8 years, really working towards this. You want to say a few words?
Something bad, I know it.
What I want to say on behalf of Metro Access customers as the Metro Access chairperson is thank you so much. I hear from customers about the price. We went to bat with this when the fare was $7 and it got reduced to $6.50. I remember those public hearings. I've been to just about all of them. And now this one where, you know, you have inflation and everything else, and customers really want to know how to budget their rides for work, for getting from, you know, medical appointments. It's about, for them, quality of life. And we appreciate that now they're able to do those things and plan accordingly.
Thank you, Paul. Good. That's well done. I'd like to take a few more comments from any members of the AAC, and I'd love to then listen to what the board members have to say, because I think that's important for us to listen.
Good
This is Anu. If any board members would like to make any further comments. Tino, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Hi. My name's Tino Calabia, and I'm chair
of... You can have whatever you want. If I have a divorce, you can have a divorce. In fact, you can have...
We have some feedback or something. Anyway, I have an additional perspective on this. I haven't been on as long as Phil, or certainly not as long as Patrick, or even Denise. But in the years that I've been on, I was with Denise at a board meeting in person at the time when, for some quirk of fate or I don't know what, all of a sudden, all of the board members became just men. And that lasted for some time, until even a few years ago. And I believe that now that we have women on board, it really makes a big difference. And I think we have to thank Sarah Klein for jumping in. She's not as senior a member as some of the members I remember who were on the board in the past or even now, but she jumped in and got that flat fare that we've been urging for 8 years, longer than I've been on the board. So thank you, Sarah, and thank the other women board members, and we look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you again.
Very good. Thank you, Tino. We can take a couple more comments. I'd like to hear from the board, and I really want to respect their time also.
Sure. Chair Sheehan, this is Anu. We have Philip Weintraub, and I believe Rico Dancy would like to make some comments.
Okay. And then I think maybe we'll turn this over to the board members so they can speak to us. I'd love to hear what they have to say also. Okay.
And I also want to say that we have to have all people from all groups, not just like this, just men in all groups, and include, and especially have people with disabilities on the board as well, because just that way also make a big difference. Like for example, it's just like that way people with disabilities understand that they need to do things like make the place accessible, but also make the train the metro staff, including the station managers and people at the kiosk, that to be more patient with people with disabilities and keep it, be sure everything is working as far as accessibility.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
And
Anu, Rico, Chair Sheehan, Rico intended to make some comments.
Go ahead, Rico, and then we'll take comments from the board members.
Sure.
I am so joyful on this issue. Oh, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I am so joyful on this. What's the work that we all did? I'm so happy. I am full of joy. I want to thank everyone for their partnership and the work that we all did together. This is not a one person partnership, this is everybody that put in. I want to thank everyone for doing this work.
Thank you very much. And I will and I will just add my thanks to everybody else. Sarah, when you started speaking, I just about lost it, I think, standing up in front of everybody like that and just trying to find the words to thank all of you for making such a difference to people with disabilities. I know this committee has worked long and hard, and we have done our best to advocate, but it took a lot of courage from the board members, extremely well-informed. CFO did such a great job. And I know we had been talking about doing an impact study and what it would take and how much it would cost and would it be sustainable to the system. And everything we heard back from from the board that day was exactly everything that we wanted to hear, that it had been researched, that we did know what the impact of the putting a service like this together. You had the courage to stand up and make a decision that really has a huge impact on the disability community. And that's why we are here as the AAC. So I'd love to open it up to all of you to talk to us and tell us what you think. And then also maybe tell us what you want to do in the next year. This is great. Thank you for coming.
Well, this is Sarah Klein. I guess I'll jump in. Although I see that you have a member with his hand raised. I don't want to jump in front of anyone.
Go ahead, Sarah. Okay. We owe you a lot.
Well, I have time. I want to thank all of you because this is the way the process is supposed to work. And it doesn't work well unless everyone is communicating together and making sure that the needs and desires and what you want are clear. And you did that incredibly effectively. And I'm thinking back to when Raina and Camila and I joined the board, April, who was my alternate, was appointed later. We had a briefing with Phil and Anu, and I can't remember if there were others there. I think there may have been
Matt
someone
else.
Would
have been there, maybe.
Maybe. I'm trying to. All I remember is Phil, honestly, because
Director Camila was also there.
Yes.
Yes.
It was memorable. I came back from that meeting and I told the committee, "God has granted us the African Queen's wish. We have wonderful, considerate, powerful women that are going to fix things that we've been trying to fix for a long time." I remember that meeting.
It was something. And yes. What Phil came to that meeting so organized with, here's what we're interested in, here's what we'd like to see, here are the challenges that we're facing, here's who we're working with. And we left with this just so much better understanding of the interactions, the AAC with the board and the staff and all of the issues. And I think that what that meeting allowed us to do, Bryna and Camila and I, was to say, why is it this way? And I'm not sure that the board had a chance to reflect for a number of years on sort of the, how did we get to this point? But because we were coming in kind of fresh, we were able to say, well, does it have to be like this? Or can we do something different? And unfortunately, it then took us a year and a half to really get our arms around it. But I guess better late than never. And I do also, so besides thanking Phil and his representation of the AAC, the Metro staff on this issue was just phenomenal because I have been peppering folks with questions throughout my time here. And they just always come back with amazing amounts of information. And this particular issue, we were, Ryan and Rame remember, it was like not very long before we were going to adopt the budget. And we were talking, the federal members talk together. We're talking about what can we do on this. Like, I don't know if we're going to have time to get this information, but we asked the staff these questions, came back with incredibly detailed information that allowed us to move forward. And so I think just so much credit goes to Yetunde and her team on this as well. So I'll stop there. I guess you asked about going forward. I'm really interested in the AAC's thoughts as we move forward on the 8000 series railcar procurement, because that is going to impact rail riders for a long time to come. So we have to get that right. And we're not going to get it right unless we hear from all of you, from the range of different types of folks who are going to be using those rail cars to make sure that everybody can have a really great experience on them. So that's a priority for me. And I guess I'm interested in what your all priorities is going to be going forward, but I'll stop there. And thank you for the invitation to this meeting and for all the work you all have done.
Okay.
Lucinda?
Thank you. Yes.
So I'm Lucinda Babers, one of the DC representatives on the board. And first of all, I'm delighted to be here, and I sure hate I missed that meeting because it sounded like a great meeting. I'm not sure if I was on yet, though, because I did come after Sarah. But first of all, thank you all. It's you all that the reason this happened, that our three federal partner directors, Sarah, Brianna, Camilla, that they heard you all. And then we heard the passion in Phil's voice, Denise's voice, Pat's voice, as you all came before the microphone at meetings and shared with us that, okay, what we had done for the budget was good, but it, you know, where was Metro Access? Where was everyone else? And so thank you all for bringing that to our attention. And then Sarah brought it up. And I think that you all could see there was just no hesitation from the rest of the board members because it was well put together. It was thoughtful. It was the right thing to do. So we should be thanking you all for making sure that you made sure that we did what we needed to do to help all riders. And looking forward, you know, you all ride. You know, we have a fiscal cliff coming up for FY25's budget. So we're gonna want to hear your input too as to how you think that we can help close that gap. So that's probably what I'm gonna be expecting from you all now. So I will hand it over now to Brian.
Okay. Yeah, this is Thomas Labor. I was at some of the hearings to try to lower the fare too, even before I became a board member. And like, I'm glad to see there's going to be a fixed fare of $4 instead of us trying to figure out what time of the day it's going to be more, what time of the day it's going to be less. So I'm glad to hear there's going to be a fixed thing. And also, I like to thank everybody who set it up for us to go to New York. Those of us that went, well, I have you thank you for setting it up for us. I really do appreciate having the opportunity to go. And also, I would like for more wheelchair users, if you can, to come when we test out stuff. But when we test out the new van, I was one person that was doing that. And when we went to New York to test out the new subway trains and the thing about bringing to DC, I was the only one, but I was glad I was able to be there because I was able to point out stuff that other people didn't spot or what have you. But it would be nice if you can, and your wheelchair user, the next time we go to test our equipment, you could be there. Because, you know, I would try to do my best to participate and do whatever I can with the committee. I love you all, and I think we're doing a mighty, mighty good work. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. I couldn't agree more. I'm Brianna Helfer. I'm an alternate federal director, but have the opportunity to be the board liaison to the Rider Advisory Committee. And, you know, it's been so great for the AAC and the RAC to come together. And, you know, I think about engagement and kind of the cycle of mature advocacy, and the AAC is so mature in your advocacy. You know, to be mature advocates, it means being part of the process. And being part of the process is not just bringing kind of the challenges, but also the solutions. And so Denise, I will say that near the end, your testimony where you brought the visuals of your medication and your money was so powerful. But you've all stayed the course in the process and being part of the process, going to visit, you know, the new equipment, the 8,000 series, being part of the budget process, bringing forth other, you know, issues and knowing those ramps and so mature advocates. And the other one is being persistent. And Phil Posner, I think you get the persistence award, but it's so important to be persistent, but to come with us on this journey as because the board members also have to be persistent, right? And so that we work together, not at odds with each other, but together. And the third is patience. And so for all of you, thank you for your patience. I know for this particular item, it's been a long journey. So thank you for your patience. And, you know, we're not always going to get it right, but I think together and collaboratively and thinking through it and the solutions, you know, we can make the system better and more accessible for everyone. And so, you know, I echo everything that Sarah and Lucinda had offered in terms of, you know, keep stay at the table, be with us on the journey, and just looking forward to, you know, that accessible system that everyone can use. And then I just really want to put a pin in what Lucinda said about our 25 cliff, the fiscal cliff. We need a coalition of riders that are going to advocate, not just advocate for what you want in the budget from the board, but advocate, you know, across the region for the system, because there are many players that support the WMATA system in terms of funding. And so regardless of what jurisdiction you live in, to be at the table and be good advocates and, you know, really not just come to the WMATA board, but think about how to be a good coalition across the region. So thank you for all you guys do and bring to the table, because your lived experience, there's nothing better than that experience and expertise. So thanks.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian, if I can mention something to Dr. Helfer, for the fiscal cliff, as a Virginia Square resident, one of the things I have suggested is a special taxing district around metro stops, bus and rail, that would be used to fund the transportation system. And even though it would hit me hard at Virginia Square, because I live across the street, but it would be worth it to help. My tax won't keep it afloat, but all of the developments that are currently going on all around WMATA properties and stops, having the local jurisdictions set up special taxing districts targeted for transportation, I think would be a really good suggestion. And so, blame me.
Now's the time to start putting all those creative ideas on the table and we'll see where they go. So thanks. Anyway, thanks for having us. And thank you for acknowledging the and celebrating the milestone, because so often we forget to take a pause and celebrate those important milestones. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Secret health as help, as you probably know, there is a large number of WMATA staff who have family and friends with disabilities. And when we always talk to them first, and they say, oh, we understand. My son or my daughter has the same problem. So thank you all so much.
Thanks, everyone. Thank Unfortunately, you. I cannot stay, but I will look forward to seeing all the minutes. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
If that's okay, I'll hang on until probably about 6:45, then drop off.
Okay, and unfortunately, I have to drop off now, so thank you.
Thank you.
But keep smiling, Lucinda.
Oh, always. Thanks, Phil.
You make my day.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, all right. Very good. So I did hijack the agenda. I can go through right now and see if I can reestablish the agenda a little bit. I think next we have approval of the minutes, of the board minutes, and of the agenda.
Chair Shane,
yes.
Just to state, we also have the chief financial officer joined the meeting.
Very good. Yotunda. Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much to the committee for having me this evening. It's an honor and a privilege for me to be here. I've been at Metro for 13 years. I've been on this job for 4 months. It feels like much longer, but it's just 4 months. I'm very privileged to serve in such a manner as the Chief Financial Officer of the Washington Metro. I do understand that our financial policies and recommendations that we make to the board influence and impact lives across the region. And so I take it as a very serious charge for me personally. I'd like to thank board member Sarah Klein for her leadership as well. The questions she asks are thought-provoking and directionally positive for all our participants, all our riders across the region. I thank also the other board members who have now left the meeting, board member Helfand, board member Babers as well, for their leadership and what they bring to the table, and just ensuring that voices are heard and really good policies that bring positive change to our riders are also put forth and passed eventually. I thank Randy Clark as well, our general manager, for his leadership and what he has brought to the leadership team, and how he charges us forward with our strategic plan, and ensuring that we follow that plan through is just not, you know, picking up dust somewhere on a shelf, but that we do follow that plan through, and the impacts of that plan will continue to impact our riders positively as we roll out many of the projects encompassed within the plan. So again, I say thank you for having me. It took literally a village. I'm a small representation of the entire budget team. You didn't see them all at the board meeting the other day. The folks you saw were a small representation of the larger team. We couldn't bring the whole team, we wouldn't fit. but the folks you saw were a small representation of the entire team that work really, really diligently year in, year out to put our budget together and then ensure that we can operationalize the changes and the policies that are passed within the budget. So thank you so much for having me. And we're always going to continue to be here to support and do what we can for all of our riders. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I don't know, Anu, I don't know if we have Yotunda on the meeting at 6:20, do we, or no? Or did I mess up my agenda here?
No, you're correct. You're correct, yes.
Oh, okay, we do, okay. I wanted to thank you for the excellent research that you did when you presented at the board meeting. I know that I had asked for months and months, and I know Phil had done too, when he was chair, that we were interested in running an impact study as to what a fixed fare would cost and how it would impact the overall budget. And I was just so impressed by the data that you had, a data-driven decision based on facts and figures. And so many times we come before the board and yourself and staff, and sometimes the arguments are made, you know, on more of an emotional basis. But I just really respected the way that you were data driven. You had the numbers and the facts and the figures. And I think I was not sure that we were being listened to. And certainly by the testimony of the board, and particularly the testimony that you gave, it was like, wow, your impact study and the way you spoke to the data and how it was achievable just blew me away. I was so impressed by that. And I wanted to personally say thank you, because I feel like I'd been beating, perhaps not on you particularly, but maybe, to try to get someone to listen to me. And you certainly did that. And I appreciate the work that you did. And I like the results that you came up with. And thank you so much for doing that and just doing a great job. I will say, particularly with the people that have come before this committee lately, and it's kind of funny because a lot of them have been women, about 90% of them have been women, have done a terrific job. There are a lot of smart people on the budget side, on the metric side, on the board side, and a lot of them are women, and they just know what they're talking about. They're articulate, they listen, they're compassionate, and they have good business sense. So I think WMATA is in very good shape. And thank you for everything that you're doing. We appreciate it, and we're happy to work with you. We appreciate the work you do, and we'll be here this next year. We'll be fighting the fiscal cliff and working to make sure everything else budget-wise is, and system-wide, works as best as possible. So let's see. Anu, I guess I need to jump through then other little parts of the agenda, and then we'll come back and I guess we'll be talking a little bit of budget stuff.
Chair Sheehan, this is Tino Calabia has his hand up.
Okay, I'm probably running pretty far behind schedule here. Go ahead, Tino, quickly.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the fiscal cliff business, because 25 is really gonna be tough. In 24, there were some hard choices that were made, and I'm sorry that Tracy Lowe isn't here. Because one of the hard things that I think resulted was the turn back. The turn back has generated a lot of, problems that have been brought up by riders. And on the other hand, Tracy, in a media report, explained, first of all, acknowledged that things are tough and that turnbacks are tough. But she explained very, very clearly how it will not be as bad as everybody thought. She did it so clearly that I'm sure those who have been supposedly hurt by the decision will understand that it was necessary to do, but it won't be as harmful as they had feared. I hope you can bring that back to Tracy, because she is the one of the women that I applaud for now being on the board. As I said when I first spoke, I was startled at one of my first meetings at the board meeting when it turned over to all male. I could not believe it, but I was new, so what did I know? welcome, as Patrick has said, welcoming the women. And Yatunda, I hope I got that right. Welcome, and it's fabulous to have women aboard and bring that perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tino. Okay, so let me go to my agenda item on review of the agenda. We will take a few more. We may have a few more things that we can add to the agenda later on. Can I jump to one of the things I'd like to put on the agenda, actually, would be, if we have time, would be the reaction of the group with respect to the New York trip. And I'd like to hear from people on the 8,000 car series. That is a big topic of discussion right now. Any other additions to the agenda, or can we approve the agenda as amended, perhaps by me?
So moved, Mr. Okay. Chair, and I suggest we put that in lieu of the bus rail report.
All right, very good. Any other
suggestions? Since Tino was in New York, he can tell
us
that.
Yes, very good. Good. All right, if there are all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Abstentions? Thank you. Review of the minutes. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes as written?
So moved.
Yeah.
Good. Any a second, I gather. Good. If there's no opposition, we will accept the minutes as passed. Very good. Thank you. And the board report. Do I have a motion to accept the board report as written?
I move.
And is there a second?
I remind you that it's going to be early this month. It's not going the week before Memorial Day. So
no, be ready. It is the 11th and I'll be there. Okay, good. Do I have a second for the board report?
Second.
I got a second. Okay.
Yes.
Motion to accept.
So moved.
Very good. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed or in abstaining. Okay. Thank you very much. Is Yotanda still here as far as our CFO?
Yes.
Yes, sir. I'm still here.
Good. Oh, okay. Good. My computer was just speaking to me and I didn't know if we lost you. So we have you next on the agenda speaking, I think, about budget matters with respect to, we know what we have for 24, and I'll let you discuss budget matters. And particularly, I'm interested in what is going on with the fiscal cliff in 25. That's going to be a little scary. So the floor is yours.
Thank you so much again for having me. So as you all know, we've talked about the fiscal cliff a little bit. I've presented it at several meetings. Now that the FY24 budget has passed, we have already been working on what that fiscal cliff looks like for FY25, what the different budget levers are that we can use to close the gap. There's been significant work has been done over the past few years to reduce or budget expenses and also increase revenues through different levers such as vacancy reductions, any savings on contract management, some of the things we're also looking forward to doing more in FY25 include our call center consolidation, things that are really customer focused and where we have the ability to save money while we're at it. All those things are really great. But as most people know, closing a large budget deficit like the one we have, and we've previously communicated, so I'm not breaking news here, of over $700 million is a really heavy lift. And there's no onesie, twosie type little adjustment that can close such a gap. In prior years, we've had smaller deficits, which we've been able to close the gap, making some service changes or some fare changes, and also combined as well with the management's expense reductions in-house. In FY24, we started with $184 million budget gap. And through the months, as we work through the budget, we're able to close that with different efficiency activities within the authority, but also utilizing IIJA funds for preventive maintenance activities. We have said previously that those were one-time type activities to use those IIJA funds for this purpose, and that going forward, that would not be what we would want to do. So we do have several different funding activities we're thinking about at this time. It is not definitive yet. Preliminary analyses are going on. Preliminary conversations are going on. But what I would put back to the group is to the extent that you do have any ideas, like Mr. Posner had mentioned, about the taxes around specific metro stops. I took notes as you said that. We're really, really happy to go back and research any recommendations at all that the group may have as to how exactly this gap can be closed. But again, this is just the beginning of the 25 FY25 budget development process, and I look forward to working with everyone as we work together to close this really, really monumental gap. We haven't had anything like this before in the history of Metro, and I am the finance geek in me is very excited about the challenge ahead and looking forward to a solution that works well for the region. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Excited is an interesting choice of words. I think I'd be scared. My question has to do with the infrastructure money that and the grants that have been coming out of Federal Highway Administration, FTA. Would any of those help to cut or to assist in the budget gap that we're going to have for the next fiscal year, 2025?
So we are researching all options. Mm-hmm. We did use some of those IIJA, the infrastructure funds, to close the gap for FY24. Over $100 million mm-hmm. of that was used to close mm-hmm. the FY24 gap. So again, we're researching all options at this time. The use of the IIJA we discussed was supposed to be a one-time thing for FY24. Mm. We continue to utilize all federal and local sources of funds as best mm-hmm. as we can to close the gap going forward.
Okay. And I have heard on the news, of course, that, you know, you're looking to the jurisdictions to help make up some of that funding and all, but
Patrick,
go ahead, Phil. Yeah.
Now that the budget has passed and the grant writing has begun, so they're looking for it. And I would mention to you, Tunde, there is a very powerful disability caucus in both the House and the Senate. And any of us would be delighted to talk to those caucus members about the importance of WMATA and funding.
Absolutely. Again, I love the points you're bringing up, Mr. Posner, and I've taken that down in my notes as well. And I expect that we will reach out to you as we continue to work through the FY25 budget development.
Very good.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Good suggestion, Phil. Other comments from the AAC?
Chair Sheehan, this is Anu. Tino just raised his hand.
Go ahead, Anu. I didn't quite hear you.
Tino.
Go ahead. Yes, Tino.
Ms. Rush have raised their hands.
Very good. Let's go with Ms. Rush first. Tino, ladies first. Ms. Rush, and then Tino.
Ms. Rush, if you would unmute yourself. Ms. Rush, you are still on mute. So if you would unmute. Okay. Chair Sheehan, I'm not sure if Ms. Rush is having difficulty.
Okay, let's go to Tino.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tino. Thank you.
Yatunde, when is it expected that the fare evasion fare gates will be up by the end of this year or when? Because the fare evasion problem is costing us about $40 million a year. And I'm not sure any kind of fare evasion fare gates will cure that 100%. But are those fare gates going to be completed sometime this fiscal year?
Thank you for that, Mr. Calabria. So my colleague, I don't think he's here, Mr. Tom Webster, he's actually heading up that project on the fare gates and the development and installation throughout the system. So I don't have those numbers to share because I am not as informed specifically on that particular part of the project. But I do know that we have moved forward with significant changes to the fare gates with the new technology they're coming up with. The new technology is able to give us more precise counts on what fare evasion looks like as well. So I know that that work is being done. I don't have the dates of when the fare gates would have been deployed. The new fare gates would have been deployed throughout the system, but I can go back to my colleague and just make sure we provide that response to you.
Yeah, it's about $40 million, the cost of fare evasion, am I right?
So there's a lot of debate around that as well. Most people here know that historically, the fare evasion calculation was, we used an industry standard of 2% of riders on rail, right? So there's a lot of debate about that, whether that's accurate or whether it's not accurate. I want to say exciting thing now is that the new technology we have will start to produce good data that we can use rather than an estimate. I believe that estimate you've quoted, again, is based on the historic calculation we've done over the years on what that would look like. So there's more to come on what those numbers will be based on the new technology that has been developed.
That's very, very good. I'm just so impressed with the emphasis on data. Data-driven decisions are just so key. It's good to see that you're following that. Yeah, Tino?
Yeah, can I just add that in the Senate, Tammy Duckworth has been a real champion for mass transit, and especially with respect to people with disabilities. And I'm hoping that in the coming year, we can salute her and maybe even have more to thank for her in the coming year as she advocates on our behalf.
Right. You're right. She's also done a really terrific job on the digital access, IT access and accessibility and that whole area. Yeah. She worked at Department of Veterans Affairs as a deputy undersecretary, I believe. Very impressive. So, Denise, did you come off?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Yes. You're up next. Go ahead.
Was not working properly. We need to know, well, I this is a suggestion that the AAC, we all represent different districts, Virginia, Maryland, Montgomery County, all over. We need to know who we need to get in contact with about the funding. And the same way that we slow walk and come and participate and talk, we need to do that with the people who have the money, who have control on where it should go, and they'll get tired of seeing us. They'll get to know us, even if they don't have time and, oh, here she comes. But if we do that, maybe they will have more to go for the funding from each jurisdiction. That's one thing. I do not know the name of the person who suggested that the children announce what's the next stop. The artistic children were on the TV this weekend, and it brought tears to my eyes. They announced the next stop on the Metro Rail. Get communities to participate in activities like that, to care about the rail, to stop tearing up the buses, to respect the transportation that they do have, will go a long way. You know, my cousin, my uncle, my aunt was on the bus. We got to take care of the bus. We got to act right and listen. She's announcing the next stop on the bus rail. That was so, I don't know who thought of it, but it was so, it's going to go a long, long way.
Very good. Yeah, I heard that on the radio also. I was very impressed. That was good. And the kids were very excited and they did a good job. Yeah. And if there are no more comments, then I will wrap up. Yotande, we've kept you. More comments?
We have Philip Weintraub. His hand is up.
Okay. Philip, I'll have you be the last speaker.
Yeah. I also want to know that we also should consider that maybe some awareness training for the staff who the Metro Boys and staff the kiosk at the state at the station, and part of it should be more patient with people with disabilities, and also understand the stop they're working at and know like all the exits and where they go, so they can be directing people to the right place. Because last week, like my wife was going somewhere and she got steered the wrong direction, and then they wouldn't let her go back through because after that, and it was, and she was just frustrated.
Okay, thank you, sir.
And I also have another thing about, I also think when they do put the new fare evasion gates, that they be more accessible gate, and also the rail, the fence on the each side of the gate should also be higher so people wouldn't be able to jump over them. And mm-hmm. We really get rid of this fare evasion. And also, I know another senator that's really a champion with the disabilities community, Bob Casey from Pennsylvania. He really did a lot for people with disabilities.
Right. Very good. Thank you, sir. So so I think we have our work, marching orders for us, Yotande. Thank you so much for what you've done for us with the Metro Access piece, the studies you've done. Thank you for staying tonight and talking to us, relaying what our next challenge is going to be. We have, as a disability community, made very good strides in talking to the AAC right now. We free bus and rail, not guaranteed. $4 Metro Access fare, not guaranteed. Abilities ride, not guaranteed. All of these things are worth what we fight for. And so when we have this financial cliff, it's not just their financial cliff, it's our financial cliff. So anything that we can do, and I'm going to say this also to WMATA, let us know how we can help, where we can show up, who we need to talk to, because we don't want to take any steps backward. We fought very long and hard for the things that I just mentioned three things, but we've got more. And, we need to keep improvement coming. We don't want to lose any of the things that we've fought so long for. So this is going to be a very pivotal year. And anything that we can do to help to bring this budget gap down to something that's manageable, let's do it. Let's show up. So, Yotande, thank you so much for what you've done. And we will be here to stand beside you and fight for a sustainable, safe, equitable system.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, everyone, for having
Thanks.
Me.
Thanks.
Have a good evening.
Okay, I think next on my agenda is public comment period.
Chair,
if I am correct, am I correct, Anu?
Sure. So on the agenda, we have public comments at 6:45. You did amend the agenda to have a discussion. Did you want to begin public comments now?
Let me take public comment period, and then once we get into our discussion. Our bus rail and Metro Access. We'll under bus rail. Why don't we take the the gangway cars.
Discussion? Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So I would ask any if there are any members of the public who have joined this meeting and would like to make any public comments, please tell us now. We have not received any public comments through emails or phone call messages. However, if any public if there are any members of the public, we will be happy to take their comments. If you would go ahead and raise your hands, we will take your comments in the order received. Chair Sheen, I see no hands up.
No hands. Okay, so we will then proceed on. And we will proceed on to the bus rail report. And I think that maybe I'm going to start off, and I will start off by showing my ignorance or misunderstanding of the way the gangway cars could be set up going forward. It has been explained to me, so I don't know if everyone understands it the way I now understand it, is that if we do the gangway cars, we would be doing total gangway cars, and we would not have the 8,000 series car the way it was previously decided, described to us before we went to gangway. So you would have, how did we say this, Anu? You would have an AB car that you could walk from A to B car. Then you would have another AB car, and you could walk from A to B, but you couldn't walk from B to A, right?
Correct, yes.
And then you would have another AB car if it was a six train. So you couldn't walk the length of the train, but you would be having the trains all as gangway trains, which speaks to something that Phil brought up the other day about interoperability. So that you would have your gangway trains, of course, would be, of course, totally interoperable. That is the way it was described to me. I thought we were looking at more of a hybrid type fleet where you would have an AB car, then an 8,000 the way it had previously been described to us, maybe one or two cars, and then maybe another AB car pair. But that is not how it's going to be. Was anybody else thinking the same way I was, or were you guys much more enlightened than me?
This is actually, you got it close, but what would happen if you have all 8,000 gangway cars? You would have four pairs, four AB cars, AB plus AB plus AB. And they would be connected to each other with some standard connector, and you would have an inter-car gap that we would have to worry about.
Right.
You might also have an AB 8000 coupled to a 7000, coupled to another AB 8000, and another AB 8000, another 7000. So there are various combinations, but that has not been decided yet as to how they're going to do it.
I knew.
Anytime is a melding of 8,000s and 7,000s, you have to make sure that the software will be interoperable because they're made by different manufacturers. But nothing has been decided, as I have been told. So, but I'm just imagining you can have all 8,000, all 7,000, or hybrid. And that hasn't been decided yet, but they have to consider interoperability if there are going to be any hybrids. And also for the intercar barriers, even if they're all 8,000 gangways, they're still going to be.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I don't know who was trying to get my attention while Phil was talking.
Carol,
you have Tino, you have Sandy.
Wait, hang on, wait a minute. Hang on.
Their hands up.
Okay, we'll jump to that. Hang on.
Carol wanted to clarify.
Carol, go ahead. I'm going to take Carol first, and then we'll go Tino. I don't know who else had their hands up.
Sandy.
Oh, good. Let me go. I'm going to go Carol, Sandy, and Tino. Carol, go ahead.
Although Phil may be right that there may be a consideration of mixing cars together, the idea was that the 8,000 series cars were all going to be 8,000 series cars, all eight of them, although they come in pairs. But,
so are they going to be gangway though?
Each pair is connected to each other. So that right. part is at gangway, but like Phil said, there are going to be connections between the pairs that mm-hmm. are also going to have inter-car barriers
right.
protecting people from going through the system. Mm-hmm. The idea about mixing them.
Hybrid, let's call it.
Yeah. I don't think that is the case. I may be mm-hmm. corrected later, but to my knowledge, that's not what we had discussed.
Well, I know that Lynn is coming to the bus rail meeting, right, Tino? So I certainly will ask that question because I was not under the impression that it would be, let's say, four sets of gangway AB for the eight-car train.
Yes, she's also coming to the rack on Wednesday, so you can
yes, ask her. And I will be there too. Good. I need something to do on Wednesday, Phil, you know?
Yes.
Sandy, you're up.
Yeah. Yes, I also thought that we'd heard from Lynn Bowersox that the 8,000 cars would not be mixed with other series cars. It would just be 8,000 pairs within a train.
8,000 pairs, right. Okay. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, four pairs of 8,000. Anyway, I would like to stress one more time. You're all going to get tired of hearing me say it. I like the concept of just a pair of open gangway cars so that you have the passengers who do feel they can walk up and down, back and forth between cars while a car is moving, find they can spread out within those two cars. I think that would be very challenging for people in wheelchairs, people with walkers, people have trouble walking, people like myself who have trouble seeing to grab a pole to be steady to walk between cars. Mm-hmm. But yes, many riders could go between those two cars. But what I want to stress over and over again, and well, I like the concept that the whole train is not open, making it so easy for nefarious people to go the whole length of the train. They do it already by going through doorways at the end of cars that they're not supposed to go through. Why make it that much easier for them? But where the pairs of AB cars are connected, everybody uses this term, inter-car barrier. An inter-car barrier, the best I have seen it to date, is not a barrier to a person stepping off the edge of the platform or falling into the gap between the cars. And I thought that was the whole reason this came up in the first place, is to solve that issue.
Mm-hmm.
The inconsistency of the inter-car barrier between the A and the B car in a pair, which is imperfect because that accordion wall, as you're facing it from the platform, is set back a good 10 inches. Well, at least on the model we saw in New York. Okay, it could be redesigned. But currently, the model we saw in New York, that inter-car accordion wall is a good 10, maybe 12 inches back from the edge of the platform. And the base of it is even further back because the wall
kind of.
Absolutely.
And I have. First step.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I have big feet, and I am quite sure I could step off the edge of the platform.
And we've had, Sandy, just so you know, well, you probably realize we had the same fight or discussion with the 7,000 series, and that had to be redone. So I think one of the, and I appreciate you going to New York, and that's one of the things that we need to be able to see if this is what they're going to go with, to make sure that the between car door barriers are going to be sufficient for our needs. And so that's, right. you know, that's you as a low vision person. That's me as a pretty much a blind person, because, you know, I've got enough vision to be able to see light between the cars thinking, oh, that is the doorway and I'll just take my first step and down I go. Right. So yeah, that's important. So that'll be something that we will do. And I appreciate you going and reporting on that. Thank you, Sandy.
Sure.
Next we have.
Go ahead, Tino. Yes.
Pat, your first description of what you understood is correct. Another way of describing it is that if there are six trains or eight trains, they would be broken up into sets of two. Mm-hmm. In other words, the set of two would also be called a married pair. And mm-hmm. you couldn't go from married pair A into married pair B, etc. A true open gangway train is like what we saw in New York. A passenger could go from one end of the train all the way through all the cars to the final end of the train. That would be a true open gangway train. The problem that we first encountered was, of course, I've shared articles about, one was reported that four or five people had been killed falling into the gap between the regular 7,000 type cars.
I remember those.
And a couple of people since then have fallen through the cars that the trains that we have now. And a couple years back in New York, mm-hmm. There was two women who fell through and one of them was crushed to death. So our first concern had been this gap that exists from series two through series seven. When we began looking at the open gangways, in which there would be less of that kind of mistake made. With respect to the couplets that are a married pair, Sandy has mentioned that that's what she prefers because of what she defines as nefarious people who will go all the distance from the end of the train to the front of the train. On the other hand, one of the things that WMATA is doing now is that WMATA has already deepened its security services, not just WMATA police, but other police services are now in the station somewhere. And there are also a few of what other transit companies call ambassadors. These are civilians, they're in uniform, but they're not armed. And they do more like social work. And I've circulated that, and I will circulate it again what it is. In fact, in what I'll circulate it about there, Patrick, is a schematic of the married couplet kind of open gangway that has been considered for WMATA. It's a very good schematic. The problem is with, a smartphone, the schematic is so large, but yet not large enough to be able to appreciate with just a smartphone.
Your impression of what you saw then, Tino, on the inside, did you see enough? I know we were going to change the configuration of the seating somewhat, but did you have enough poles, grab poles and things like that for individuals, let's say on the benches or?
Yes, with respect to the seating, it was all parallel seating that we suggested be changed to one side of the train having the seating all along the side and the other side having the horizontal seating such as we now have in the Series 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's a difference. Mm-hmm. Some were hoping that some of those seats might be not just folding up seats, but that some of those seats be able to be higher than other seats, which would be lower. so people of different heights could be more comfortable.
And the last question on that, Tino, one, were the seats comfortable? And two, about the lighting and that sort of thing in the car, what was your impression there?
Well, the seats were not as comfortable as we have in the 7000 because they're not padded in the, in the same way we have. Although many sets of the seats are, you can fold them up and have more people stand where those seats would have been folded down. But with respect to the poles, let's see, Thomas mentioned how it might be difficult for his wheelchair to get around them, although he was able to, but it wasn't as easy as one would hope. With respect to the lighting, I think the lighting seemed adequate, although it was daylight and the windows were open.
Of course.
I don't know if you can really tell.
Yeah, and as the train was in the station, was there a gap between the edge of the station platform and the train?
No, it wasn't in the station. It was in a rail yard.
Oh.
They did show us where the level of the platform would be. They kind of physically showed us by putting
there
where there would be.
Okay.
And that didn't seem as much of a problem as one might expect. Okay. It certainly isn't the problem that we had in some of the Virginia stations a couple of years back.
And particularly as we had trains that, stations that settled and all that sort of thing. So we had to put in between car, the gap reducers, whatever. Yeah. And what is the experience of people that have ridden on these? Are they more comfortable, less comfortable? How was the ride?
Actually, we didn't meet anyone who has ridden on the open gangways model we saw in the work, but I've ridden on them, and unfortunately Steve's not here, and Steve has ridden on many open gangways, and I find them carefully really comfortable. So that wasn't a problem, but it wasn't a problem that was addressed.
Right, of course. In the yard where you went to. Okay.
No, it was in an open yard.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, I understand. I don't know why I thought it would be I thought it would be in the station. Shows you what I know. Okay, other folks went. What were your impressions or other questions for the experts here?
Chair Sheehan, this is Anu.
Yes.
We do have several people with.
Oh, I'm sorry. You should have hushed me up. Anu, I was taking over the meeting.
No worries.
Let's go.
So we have Denise Rush, Doris Ray, Vanessa Coles, Thomas Mangrum, and Sandy Newsel.
Okay, we'll take those five. Thank you. In that order. Okay. And then we'll jump to maybe we'll give Paul a couple of minutes on Metro Access. Who knows?
Okay. Denise, Ms. Rush, if you would go ahead.
Okay, this is Denise Rush. My concern are the barriers. Because you all were in the yard, you didn't see how far the barriers are going to be from the platform. So they have been suggested that they have a screen. They have the rail car to stop at a certain spot at every station, and they put a screen. A screen comes up or is there that comes up when the train arrives where the barrier would be, and then a blind person couldn't fall through, which is a good suggestion. I don't know, but that is a thought that, you know, when it comes in, the screen comes up, and then people get on, and then the car goes away, and then nobody's fallen between the barrier. But with you all not being down in the tunnels, you didn't see the lighting. You didn't see the, can you see out there? Or you didn't experience it. Once the cars get here, I guess we will be able to see what is the barrier? Is it a good barrier? Because before it wasn't. And that's my main concern. I thought that's why we, as Sandy said, and Tino in the beginning, that's why we were thinking it's a great idea for the gangway cars to keep people from falling that were visually impaired or blind. And sighted people don't have that problem. I also want to know if they have room for your bike or your baby carriage or whatever. You put it in this spot, but then you got to stand with it or what? Can someone explain that to me? Your luggage or your stroller, there's an area for those things. Where does the person go? Hello?
This is Carol Lopez, Ms. Rush.
Yes?
Actually, this is not a perfect system. The way that it is configured in New York, there are benches all the way on both sides of the train. There are no seats, and then so there is room for people to move, and I guess bikes and strollers and stuff. But there's no specific location. Whereas the way that WMATA is trying to configure it, there are going to be some areas that have space for bikes and with seating adjacent to it, and areas where people who have strollers can sit next to their children. You can't just put a child and park them there. And so it's a little bit more tailored to the needs of different riders. And that's what was presented to the AAC last time. And I think that your point is very important. I mean, you make room for something, but where do you sit? A cyclist goes and brings their bicycle and they run the bicycle all across in front of a bunch of seats. They're taking up all those seats anyway, right? So there needs to be a design that allows for somebody to bring a bike and not obstruct the rest of the seats. So I think your point is very good, but I think WMATA is looking at it a little bit more closer than what at least I witnessed when we were in New York.
That's a good, maybe that's a question, Carol and Denise. I'll bring that up on Wednesday and see what because you would, if you have your bike and you're sitting down in one of the bench seats, the three people, one to your left, one to your right or whatever, they'll be trapped by your bike.
And your luggage and your strollers and I just want to know
what the thinking is. Yeah.
Yes, and it's my understanding that if you have a A B pair, you can't have anything all the way down. It has to be A B 8000 K because those new rail cars are going to have a different, it's totally different. It's not going to be able to pair with the 7000 because of the announcements, because of the upgrade of technology. There's no way you're going to pair them together. So, I know I heard it, but it doesn't mean it's fact, that the 8000 series is going to be on a particular line. Is that correct? It's going to be on a particular, like, is all of them are going to be on the red line, or all of them are going to be on the silver line. There's going to be a certain line in the beginning that will have the eight car series. Is that correct?
Ms. Rush, this is Carol Lopez. Although I am not sure of whether it's going to be in one line or not, one of the reasons that they the WMATA had a hard time putting the open gangway cars is because you need to have special maintenance rail facilities for those trains. Therefore, perhaps you are right that they may just start on one line because wherever they have a rail yard. But I don't think that has, I'm not sure if that's been determined, but there may be some, they may just begin in one location, but I am sure that it can be distributed.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and this is Anu. Next would be Doris, followed by Vanessa Coles, then Thomas Mangrum, Sandy Newsel, and Tino has his hand up again. So Doris, go ahead.
So is it me now?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I want to express concerns that have already been enunciated here. And others about the gap.
Doris, I'm having a hard time hearing you. Could you speak up a little bit?
I'm sorry. I'm not speaking up well enough. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. And I was sorry to not be able to go. I had work priorities that came up, but. My major concern is about the gap and the incidence of people falling. I'm very concerned when I read one of the articles that we saw about the trains having positions for luggage and bikes and strollers and such. My concern there is navigating through the cars and the portion that will be the gap wherever those are going to be, and you know, as somebody who historically has often ridden the trains on the Orange Line out to Vienna during rush hour. And has ridden the Silver Line trains. I'm having nightmares about whether there are going to be problems with all of that. And I understand that we couldn't see that all of that those dynamics going up to the rail yard in New York. But I think it was wonderful that people were able to go up and see it. I agree with Denise about seeing it on the platforms and how that arrangement is. I'm concerned also about what the lighting is going to be like on the cars and what we're going to be doing about the footlights, what I call the footlights at the doors, because right now my perception using the trains right now that there's so many mixes of different lighting in the stations now that it's kind of confusing, and I even as many years as I've ridden the trains since the very beginning of the metro system, it seems scarier these days. And then the one thing that I wanted to ask about the design was, my understanding is the reticence of WMATA staff at the first, my memory of what they said in our meetings was one of the concerns was that we have tracks that are curved, and there was a concern about getting gangway delay trains because they might not be able to easily execute the turns in our rail system, whereas in New York, they're either none or full or less than that. So I'm wondering if anybody knows about that situation, because that could cause danger for anyone riding the train. My last vote is more of the transfer seating and less of the whatever it's called, horizontal against the window. It's just very hard to use train systems that have those kind of seats, my experience.
Thank you, Doris. We have brought that question up about curves and will these trains be able to navigate those. We've been told that there shouldn't be any problem. I think it's a concern. I think it's worth keeping our eyes on.
Yeah, frankly, it might be an era for me to think this way, but every time I think about it, frankly, I think about the article that was sent around about the train wreck in New York in 1918. And I'm not saying that's the way their trains are now. You understand?
Yeah.
I just think about those pictures and it just.
Right. I'm thinking the engineers, not being an engineer myself, but it's a good question. And I think we continue to ask that. Of course, Lynn and Brian Dwyer will be there, I'm sure, at Bus Rail, so we can ask that question and see if we can get some more information on that. Good. Thank you. Thank you, Doris.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doris. And next would be Vanessa Coles. Vanessa, if you...
Alda.
Go ahead.
Alda.
Thank you, Sarah. I didn't realize she was still here. Good. That's very nice of you to stay so long. Who's up next, Anu?
Vanessa Coles.
Press Alt plus A to unmute your microphone, or press and hold the space key to alert. Sarah Klein.
Vanessa, you're on mute again.
Who is who's speaking, Anu?
Alda.
Vanessa, if you'd like to make any comments, go ahead.
Audio now unmuted.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, I'm trying to get myself off mute. Thank you.
Sure.
So I would like for someone to explain or reiterate the reason why we are trying these gangway cars, because is it for to keep fluency in the trains so there's no overcrowding, so the people can move back and forth? So for security purposes, for one-way exit in case of emergency, because I don't know
alert.
How
Bernice
other
Henry has
used the system in New York, but I see that as not only just the nice people that'll sit still and do what they're supposed to, but the children that can be going back and forth through the teenagers. How is that working for other transit system? And if you can explain to us why we are considering. Thank you.
Vanessa, this is Carol Lopez, and I don't mean to present every aspect of why WMATA is considering this, but I can just give you a brief few words about it. I think WMATA wants to have the flexibility of moving more people at the same time, and this open gangway allows that to happen, and I think that's probably the biggest reason why they are looking into it. At the same time, they allow flexibility to have spaces for different types of users, including particularly people who use wheelchairs, people who are taking bikes on the train, people who use bring strollers on the train. So it gives a little bit more space to move around and perhaps fit every type of customer. And I believe that that's the reason WMATA is looking in this at this open gangway trains.
Carol, let me ask you a question. This is Pat. Sure. With your last point, we see a reduction particularly federal workers going into town and taking the train. So are they looking at a different population that they expect to be taking the train? So they're looking to maybe appeal to more of the, well, I don't know, the non-worker types? Do you think that's part of it?
I think that we have seen a dramatic increase in use of our trains, and I think it's going to continue to increase as the pandemic issues go wind down. And I think that this train is not going to appear tomorrow, as you know. We're starting now, but I don't even dare to say when it's going to actually come in place. But at that point, we assume that the volume of people using our system is going to increase, and not necessarily people who are going to work, but people who come to DC to do business that are actually here because they want to shake hands with other business people, etc. So there's going to be continue to increase the volume of people who use our system. And the more we look at the people that actually use our system, the more people that are going to come to use it.
Interesting. All right. Okay. I hadn't really thought of it that way, Carol, and that's something to consider. Okay. Who was next, Anu?
Next would be Thomas, followed by Sandy.
Okay.
Yes. This is Thomas. Like I said, I was glad I was able to go because I was only one that was a wheelchair user, or at least brought my chair with me. Now, the poles at every door entrance, when the train is loaded up with people, you can easily see that wheelchair is not going to be able to get on to the train because people are not going to want to move away from the poles. They got the poles right there at the entrance for you to come in. And then although I was able to get on, because there wasn't a lot of people on the trains that we got on in New York, but it was a kind of like a tight space, but I was able to get by them, but I'm not gonna be able to get by them when you got people holding on to the poles. So, and then plus the way they had it for wheelchair seating, the space was small for the wheelchairs. And like, it's more like for like a little stroller, for a little baby, but it wasn't a space fit for a grown person to use a wheelchair. It wasn't really spaces for that. So like that, a lot of the able-bodied people didn't see that, the one that was able to walk on. So I'm glad I was there. But that got to be worked on. We can't have the poles right there at the door soon as the door opens. You see, right now we got the poles kind of like sitting back from the door. But what they talking about now, they're talking about having the poles right there at the door. So how is a wheelchair user going to be able to get on during rush hour? Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Sandy, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sandy. Pat asked the question about poles for people in the bench seats or in the seating. And what we saw in New York was just an example. And I think WMATA is planning to have, you know, somewhat different design, a little bit more like our 7000 series. But anyway, the poles, vertical poles by the bench seating to grab to stand up, there weren't enough on the train that we saw an example of. There were several instances where there would be three seats and you in the middle seat would have to reach across in front of somebody to get to a pole that is on the other side of the person sitting next to you. There were overhead poles the length of the car that were quite, I thought they were well designed. And then I'd like to comment about bicycles. Riding WMATA, riding Metro here in DC, I don't think I've ever seen a bicycle rider actually sit down. They all stand up and hold their bicycle while the train is moving because there's no way to really stabilize your bicycle. So all the bicycle lists I've seen on Metro in DC are standing very close to a doorway. They rarely get back into the seating area. And usually if they do get back into the seating area, it's at the end of a car. Anyway, just a couple more thoughts.
We have things to think about. Good. Thank you, Sandy. Good. We've had discussion for about 25 minutes. I know we're going to have more discussions next week. I did promise Paul I'd give him a couple of minutes. Paul, you're up.
Hello, hello, everybody. Metro Access Report. Let me bring that up. Okay. So from last month, we had several discussions, and I'll keep this short and brief, actually a lot. So we talked about the web booking update. Ms. Anderson gave us an update on that issue and that they are trying to work and find a long-term solution to some of the issues that myself and other users have with web booking. And they hopefully will come back to us that they're testing right now, and hopefully we'll resolve some of the slowness and other issues with web booking that we've reported. The other piece was we had talked about the WebBookly application. Mr. Blake is hopefully promising us that we might have at the same time by June 30th or July 1st of this fiscal year, customers might have its first access to seeing real-time or some parameters of real-time vehicle information for Metro Access vehicles as he works out those kinks as he went through this pilot and working with his team on that. So we're looking to forward over the next couple of months before it happens to hear the progress about that. I know also we talked about, put this down so I look at my notes here. We talked about the Metro Access window pickup change. Again, that's another project that was brought by Metro Access Management where, you know, you're given your negotiated window and it's 30 minutes after that stated time. They hope to have that going in effect by July 1st. And we also are eagerly looking forward next month to communications of what's going out to customers and when and soon, since now we're getting into the month of May. We're getting 2 months into this. We talked about the Metro Access flat fare cap. A lot of questions were asked about that in terms of, you know, what does it mean for late trip credits? What does it mean into abilities ride? What it means, you know, with the influx of rides, will Metro Access handle the possibility of increased rides? You know, Mr. Blake talked about there might be the possibility if that was the case when it goes flat fares that either, you know, of course, there might be increased share rides. So that is a possibility. And some can go to the abilities rides, but they're looking to look at all efficiencies on the table if an adjustment needs to be made. We also talked about Denise, did I miss anything? Because I know we have very short time here.
We need to get a clarification with the AAC committee about the fare. It is not a flat fare.
Oh, okay. Let me. Oh, so let me reiterate that. So the new fair that would take place. Oh, let me reiterate. On Mr. Blake said around the 25th of June, hopefully, the fare would be anywhere up to $4, but that would be the cap. So if you had a fare of like on the PG bus for a dollar and double that would be $2. That would be the fastest, you know, bus fare in that route, like it's been in some trips for me, or the Montgomery Ride On or the DC Circulator, whatever those fares are, and they could be lower than that fare. The fare could be possibly lower, but the cap would be at $4. Did I state myself correctly, Ms. Rush?
Yes, because the AAC doesn't understand that. So we need to understand it the most. Because people are talking to us and asking us. It is a cap $4, and it could be $4 or it could be no dollars. But it's a cap. It's not a flat fare.
Thank you for correcting me. And hopefully, again, there will be education to the customers before June 25th. And I'm eagerly looking for management as we look at the May and June subcommittee meetings as on what information is going to be, distributed and broadcasted to customers too. I'm always the person that advocates that we inform customers well in advance before the change happens. And obviously, since the stated date is June 25th, they need to be well aware of, you know, these options and the intricacies of it.
Paul had a quick question for you.
Sure. What is your quick question?
Where's my ride? I understand that I had some adventures over the last couple of weeks with Where's My Ride, which is why I missed your meeting last week. Or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was. When I talked to the Where's My Ride person, there had been a series of mishaps over, let's say, an hour and a half, 2 hour period. But the Where's My Ride person could only see the portion of the trip that was in front of her. She did not have the ability to see the fact that a ride had been promised here, and then finally it got to her. So the way, let's say, Mr. Blake has that ability to see a whole series of what's gone on since, let's say, a given time, let's say 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock to 4:30.
Well, let's be clear, Pat, because this is the first time I'm hearing this.
Pat, do also bring that up at the AAC meeting as a comment. But
hang on. Go ahead, sir. Yeah.
Okay, but I want to know, are you talking about Uber or are you talking about Metro Access?
Well, it's interesting. It started off as Uber. An Uber trip didn't show up. Then the next person told me my Uber trip was coming and it was half a mile away. It was 0.7 miles away. And then it disappeared. And then the third one was, which was the lady who said, oh, we've got you on Metro Access. Now, the third person that I talked to couldn't see trip one or trip two. She could only see what happened when she dialed it up.
Okay.
What I was told, sir, is that you had the ability to see trip A, trip B, and trip C.
I'm not sure. So see, again, this is where bringing this to the meeting is helpful, but
I can write it out.
I can't answer any of your questions now.
So. Well, yeah, I would suggest in this case is bring
up. Hang on, Paul. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm gonna check, but what I really need from you, Mr. Chairman, is the date of of this incident, and that
we
can go back and look in detail. This was an Uber trip, we did talk about this last time, and again, we're gonna hear more and more of this. And Metro Access customers, In a sense, have to make a decision. You know, customers, if you've been an Uber customer prior to Metro Access, if you're using your own personal app and you're in a busy city or busy town, busy times, canceled trips are absolutely a part of the Uber experience. And as more and more people come, as we come out of this pandemic and more people are using Uber, I'm not talking about Metro Access, I'm just talking about using Uber in general. These things are going to increase until Uber gets more drivers on the road. If demand outstrips the increase in drivers, these things will occur. Now,
Mr. Blake, yes. I get the Uber and I get the time of day and I understand that. What I'm not understanding, or what I need to understand, I think other people would too, is does the Where's My Ride person have the ability to check a history of a trip here, a trip there, and a trip?
On Uber, no. On Uber, we have an ability to rebook your trip. I can, you know, there's a few of us who have access to the Uber system, but your trip being canceled by a driver prior is not going to get you a trip any faster. What the Where's My Ride team is doing is if you call in, they see that your trip isn't moving, there is no trip for you right now in Uber, they're going to rebook your trip for you. Going back to the driver or whoever may have canceled doesn't get your trip any quicker. What we want the people in the call center to do is when you call in and you say that I got this note on my phone that Uber can't find a driver for me, well, we want them to just quickly rebook a trip for you.
Okay. But they don't have the ability to track a trip if it cancels from Uber to Metro Access. The same way you would. They can't look at both systems. That's kind of what I'm trying to figure out.
There are certain team members who have access to the Uber Central, what we call dashboard. Yes, okay. There are some people. But when you call in, you're calling into the general Where's My Ride? And those folks are then working with the Uber team to get you another trip. Or in a very few cases, when we try to book a customer's trip over and over and nothing is happening, we may put that trip back on Metro X.
And that's what happened. Yeah. So, but it's important for the riders to know that there's only a select group of people that have the same ability to research something through the Uber and the Where's My Ride systems, which are two distinct systems. So that, yes, okay. I mean, I don't know that from where I'm sitting. All I'm doing is calling in Where's My Ride. So
that's correct.
That's important. Yeah, okay. So I appreciate that.
But see, we don't want the customers calling in saying, send me to the Uber person. We want the customer calling in saying, where's my ride? I have an Uber, but I received this note from Uber that there's no trip. That person then knows what to do.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, okay. But when I called back and referred back to this happened now, this happened then, and now I'm back on Metro Access, I get frustrated with the Where's My Ride person thinking that she's got this ability to look at all three trips and figure out what in the world's going on, and she doesn't. That's important for us to know what her screen says in front of her. Yeah.
All right. So quickly, I just want to cover. We also had questions about eligibility.
Good.
And so next month, as you can see, I put on the agenda, there'll be discussion from the eligibility team from Mr. Holbert that I see is here today. So we look forward to his presentation since we haven't heard from them in several years about the eligibility process and probably address some of the customers who had concerns and issues that Mr. Blake responded to. That is it for my report.
Thank you, Paul. And Anu, you have the wrap up?
Sure. Actually, it is 7:30. So I would just remind any members of the public who would like to make public comments before or after the meeting can send us an email at Metro AAC chair at WMATA.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100.
And any person with Metro Access concerns, please come to the next meeting and bring those so we can add you to the public comment period and be part of the discussion. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everybody. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Very good meeting. A second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, everybody. Very good meeting. All right. We'll see you next Monday.